I guess I just think of, if you know you have to fix whatever, the refrigerator, and you don't look, the refrigerator's broke, and you don't look to see what tools you need, and you just go randomly start buying tools and bringing them in, and then just kind of poking them in the refrigerator. Well, that's not the right one. And then so you go back to the store and you buy another tool, and you come back and, well, that's not the right one. Well, that's the way most people approach leadership.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by giving you new ways to think and lead. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is Adam Steck. He is the Chief Servant Officer of Southwest Steel Buildings. He also founded the company, and they are based out of Mineola, Texas. He is a college dropout, author of zero books, and has not yet been featured on any national newspapers. But Adam is a 20-year veteran of boots on the ground, team building, and business systems development. Adam has a passion for building people through leadership development, teaching practical lean concepts, and building authentic relationships in addition to steel buildings. All of this that he does by walking out Southwest's purpose to honor God, build people, and spread joy. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you, Kenny. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, as I always start our conversations with my guests, what is on your mind, Adam?
I think the thing that's been running around my mind and we've been focused on pretty heavily over the last year is this concept of leadership development and using the concepts of lean, like the Toyota Production System, and teaching lean and merging those two together and using that as a very practical conduit to teach both lean concepts and teach leadership development in the same vein.
Interesting. So you're really bridging two schools of thought together and combining that. Out of curiosity, what led you to connect the dots between those two?
I went on a Japan study mission last year, and the gentleman that I went on that with, his name's Paul Akers, and he wrote a book called 2 Second Lean. And it really is kind of bringing down all these very heady concepts of how to apply lean to your business and bringing them down to the ground level to where you can apply them and teach them very practically. I've been studying theory of constraint and some other business philosophies for the last going on 20 years, but I never could find this very practical way to help teach our people on the floor, either in the office, on the production floor, these concepts. But where I linked the two together was whenever I went on this trip and saw him actually leading the trip. And so when, you know, he would say something like, you know, stop and fix what bugs you. We would be on the trip, and this is, I mean, we're literally halfway around the world, and he would literally stop everything we were doing and fix something that wasn't right. And just the way that he led that trip, I really started to bring these together to where you could use these two to have those. Most of the time, we lack for teaching opportunities, and lean gives you the opportunity to have more frequency of those teaching opportunities to teach leadership development stuff. And so if anything, the lean, walking out the lean journey just gives you that frequency of teaching opportunities for you, for yourself and your people.
Gotcha. So it sounds like you wanted to teach leadership development, continue to pour into your team, but you didn't feel like you had a great vehicle to deliver it, and bringing in the lean piece and how it's practiced allowed you to increase the frequency of teaching opportunities, bring it down, make it more accessible for your people. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How are other leaders, whether in the manufacturing space like you are, but what do you think other leaders are thinking about when they're thinking through, you know, culture, leadership development, and maybe make it specific to the manufacturing space? I know on our earlier call, we just talked about how it's a little unusual for people to travel, you know, nationally, internationally to a manufacturing company to observe their culture, right? You're usually there to see their processes and their output.
Yeah.
So what's making the difference there? What is setting you apart? Like, why is that coming such a stark contrast in your industry?
I think it's the one, we really care about people. And it all starts with purpose. And as you stated, you know, we walk out our purpose as a company of honor God, build people, and spread joy. And the building people part is something that we're really serious about. And for a still building company to not have anything in their purpose statement about building things, it's kind of an oddity in and of itself. But but we truly feel like that for us, the Lord has given us this company and this vehicle as a conduit to build people and by that spread joy, and all that wraps up into the culture of how you develop what you're purposeful to walk out, and then what you allow. One of our we have a morning meeting every day, and it's 30 minutes where we pour into our people. And then we give them an additional 30 minutes after that they're not allowed to produce anything. They're just allowed to improve their areas, improve their workflow, improve their processes. So we take an hour out of each day that we're not, quote unquote, producing anything that the customer wants. But we're saying, hey, we're going to empower you, and we trust you to make these changes on a daily basis. And we're not just going to tell you we want you to continue to improve. We're going to give you the tools. We're going to try to train you on the skills that you need. And we're also going to give you the time and the resource to do it. And so we really put our money where our mouth is on that. And that's a part of really genuinely walking out what lean looks like. It's focused on it's lean is about building people. It's not about building even a better process. It's building the people where they can see how to do things better themselves. And I think that's one of the things that gets missed quite often. And particularly when you talk about the leadership space, you and I talked, and I mentioned this earlier, is one of the problems that the leadership space, or, you know, talking about what do I do? Like, how do I become a better leader and all this? There's so much noise out there. Because everybody's got something to say, right? Social media has given this huge platform that anybody can say anything. Matter of fact, I'm saying stuff right now. You're saying stuff. But it's people are not really locking in and equating what is the value for me and where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the hardest thing for people right now, is to cut through all the noise and figure out what's meaningful to me, my company, my team, and so forth.
Gotcha. So it sounds like you're figuring out that the timing of when do we apply these things, because there is so much noise, as you said, is something that I've been thinking a lot about recently is people taking this everything all at once approach. Mm-hmm. I've got to do every leadership thing or every self-improvement thing, every discipline thing, and I've got to do them all, and I got to master them all in the next week. Otherwise, I'm going to be a terrible leader. Do you find that's, you know, true? Was that true of yourself early on, or do you see that with other leaders that they're sort of weighed down by the amount of information, recommendations, and advice that are flooded their way?
Absolutely. I don't know if I'm sure you've heard the term yo-yo dieting. I think there's a massive, there's an epidemic of yo-yo leadership where everybody has tried everything, and it winds up making them to where they don't really respond well to anything. And because they're focused on the wrong thing. They're focused on the equivalent would be the scale if you're trying to lose weight. Well, they're focused on the results of the company. You know, if I'm really doing leadership right, my P&L is going to look better at the end of this quarter. Well, actually, it may not. If you're doing leadership right, you know, you may have had to invest that $100,000 into your team that comes straight off the bottom line, and it made your P&L look worse. Maybe you even went into the red. And so there's this, it's really honing in, and I'm going to say it's the focus and understanding what your company needs, I guess I just think of, if you know you have to fix whatever, the refrigerator, and you don't look, the refrigerator's broke, and you don't look to see what tools you need, and you just go randomly start buying tools and bringing them in and then just kind of poking them in the refrigerator. Well, that's not the right one. And then so you go back to the store and you buy another tool, and you come back and, well, that's not the right one. Well, that's the way most people approach leadership. And that's the way I approached leadership development for myself, is what is the latest thing that, you know, it's kind of the idea of leaders are readers and all that stuff. And I generally like to consume information, and I'm a pretty avid reader and can take in quite a bit of information, but that's not everybody can. And as a leader, or as I'm going to say, as the manager of people trying to develop yourself into a leader, whenever all you're doing is, at least for me, what I did was I would intake all the John Maxwell stuff, all the entree leadership stuff, all the whatever great stuff, helped people at a fantastic rate and pace. But it wasn't something that that I could come in and then just spew all over my people. And it's like, okay, now we should all be leaders now.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way.
Right. So do you feel like the gap where we're sort of lean met leadership that you're bridging is, there's a lot of advice given, but a lot of it comes without a sort of a how-to manual to execute and implement, or maybe here's the situations that this is best applied. Kind of like, you know, your refrigerator example is, you know, you repair your refrigerator probably with a different set of tools than you would change the oil in your car, right? Mm-hmm. But people are just saying like, no, this is a good fixing tool. Well, what does it fix? It fixes mm-hmm. things, right? Like that provided no clarity. Do you feel like that's what lean has helped you do? Because the problem I see with a lot of leaders is that they may be improving themselves at a certain rate, but when you're in a position of leadership, by definition, that means that there are those that are following you, and you want to deliver it to them instead of spewing it all over them, like you said, and now magically somehow they're supposed to turn into leaders because you regurgitated what Dave Ramsey or Dave Maxwell said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's where pausing, stopping and saying, what is my purpose? What is my, because purpose will give you focus, and you'll start to understand where you're at in your journey, what you need. And it could be you need to work on a very few specific things. And I've learned over the last probably 4 or 5 years is that in my consumption of knowledge and reading books and listening to books, and I'm constantly reading, I've got 2 or 3 books going at all times. One of the biggest things that has helped me is to realize I can't get every point in here. I need to latch onto 1, possibly 2 points out of this entire book and try to viciously apply that. And I think that was probably what hung me up in the past, is that there's all this great stuff, and there's, you know, 300 pages worth of leadership nuggets. But you go back and try to apply all of them, and you wind up applying none of them. And I think that what the applying leadership development in a lean culture does is it just gives you the frequency of opportunity to say, okay, let's talk about that conversation that you had with so-and-so. Because what lean does, when you actually apply lean in the correct format, you don't lead from the office, you lead from the shop floor. And so whatever the shop floor is, if you're an accountant and you run a CPA firm, then your shop floor is when actually at the bookkeeper's desk and at the, you know, junior CPA's desk, helping them figuring out what they need and all that stuff. If it's a manufacturing environment, it's on the production floor. You know, for us, it's manufacturing steel beams and panels and trim and that kind of stuff. You know, it's called the Gemba in the lean terminology, but whatever the Gemba is, the shop floor is for where the value is being added for the customer, you have to lead from there. And when you lead from there, you're going to have more interaction with, your frontline team members. And just by naturally having more interaction with your frontline team members, you're going to have more opportunity to coach and train and lead them based on what they're actually experiencing, instead of what some seminar says you need to bring people in you know, you need to bring people in and give these things that they may be great in and of themselves, but they're not what they, what the frontline team members need to grow right now.
Yeah. So that makes me think of a quote, and talking with a friend of mine is he'll tell me so that it's not what you know, it's what you can execute or what you do.
Yeah.
And he also had another one is if more information was the solution to all the problems, we'd all be billionaires with six pack abs.
Yep.
So if it makes so much sense to meet people where they're at and address leadership opportunities in the moment, in the situation, I can't imagine anybody listening right now would go, no, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You know, enough of this episode. Like, I can't imagine anybody saying that. But at the same time, what you're doing is causing enough of a stir because it's different. What is keeping leaders from going to where the production value is being created? Why do they keep trying to bring people to them? Is it because that's what they've seen and think that's okay, I'm just going to imitate other more senior leaders because that's what they're doing to me? Or do you think that there's some other misconception about the way in which leadership should be transferred or taught or developed?
Yeah, I may step on a few toes here.
Got steel-toed shoes.
Frankly, I think it's okay because as leaders, I think it all starts with the humility of the leader. And I think, you know, if you run a business, you start a business, the end goal for most people is you start a business, you build a business, and you get it to the point where you hire a bunch of people, the business can take care of itself. You can go to Cancun and, you know, kick your feet up and drink, whatever they drink on the beach in Cancun. But and that's okay if that is the purpose of the business is solely to produce profits for the benefit of the owner. I think in that case, the most you'll ever reach is really good management in that scenario, because the leadership starts with the one, there may be a caveat to this, but with the one with the most authority to make decisions. And if there's not humility coming from that position, then you're not going to have humility from anywhere. And leadership is first and foremost, it has to have a foundation of humility and respect for other people. And I think that what's keeping people in the office and not on the shop floor is maybe it's a lack of humility. Maybe it's they don't really know what goes on the shop floor, and they may be embarrassed if somebody, you know, you go out there and say, hey, what do you need right now? And they start talking about some, you know, machine or wrench or whatever that would make their job better or whatever the case may be, they may not have that connection there. And I think that is one of the things that leading from a lean perspective or a lean culture does is it gets you in the mix and forces you to know what's going on with your team and your frontline people. As a matter of fact, you can lead a lot flatter organization running a lean organization than all these layers of management, because so-and-so's got to manage so-and-so and so-and-so's got to manage so-and-so. And by the time information actually gets up to people with authority to make decisions, it was a game of telephone, and what you actually decide doesn't really impact the people on the floor the way that it could. I don't know. I do know it is very hard work to do all the stuff that is required of a leader in say a CEO role or a president's role, and then also go out and spend time on the floor, but it is an absolute must. I cannot emphasize that enough. If you want to know what's wrong with your business, go ask your people that are adding value to whatever product you're selling to your customer. They will tell you. They'll tell you exactly what's wrong. But they have to trust that you're not going to slap them down, and that you're going to humbly listen and do something with that constructive with that information.
Right. And not, you know, have a sensitive ego to where you take it as a personal attack to you.
Right.
They're really, they care about, oftentimes they, I think you probably agree, they care about the customers and the people they're producing value for, and they want them to get the most benefit from what they're doing. But they're not in a position of authority, like you said, to make those decisions that could change, you know, the outcomes or the price points or whatever it may be that would be more most helpful to the customer.
Absolutely. And I know one of the things that we do is we give every person in our company the authority to stop immediately and fix something that's wrong. They don't have to ask permission. They don't have to. If something, particularly if it's something that is directly affects the customer, matter of fact, they don't have permission. The expectation is you're going to stop and that you will never let that stuff get to the customer because that doesn't spread joy. So you filter everything down through your purpose. That doesn't spread joy. That's not excellence whenever you let bad product go out. But yeah, I think giving authority. Now, again, we've spent 2.5 years every day, every workday for the last 2.5 years, we've spent an hour pouring into our people every day. I don't know what that equates to. It's a lot of potential profit to the bottom line if you're looking at it from strictly an accounting standpoint, but it has improved our culture and our team's ability to serve our customers. You can't quantify that stuff.
Do you think that that's part of the problem and why some leaders may struggle? I mean, I'm all for, you know, you hear the terms, you know, data-driven decision-making and things like that. And I'm all for data as a former, you know, digital marketer, agency owner, things like that. I used to interpret the data and it does and can help you make better decisions. But do you think this pendulum may have swung the other direction? And if you can't pin a specific ROI on it, that leaders are avoiding those activities?
I think so. And particularly for people who are comfortable staying in the office and they really don't want to get on the shop floor. They don't want to get in the mix. They're not really interested in getting in the trenches with the customers. I think that that's really a protection mechanism, but I'm going to say that we execute on data. So matter of fact, we just killed one complete division of our company based on data points. We trimmed a whole nother one based on the ability to focus. It was opportunity cost. It was profitable and we cut it off. But what it was doing was taking the opportunity cost was so high for what we could actually be the best. We felt like we could be the best in the world at. And it's, you know, the Jim Collins good to great hedgehog principle. So we really honed in and focused on that stuff. But so data is absolutely important. You don't throw data out, but it depends on what means more, profit or people. For me and our company, people are more important than the profit. You have to make profit to continue the operation. So somebody that says profit doesn't matter, they're lying to you. Profit does matter, but it's what is the main focus? And if structurally, if your company is set up correctly, if you focus on the people, the profit will come. And that is all a structural setup. That's good management. That's good leadership. That's good, you know, financial structuring. And you know, what do you say yes to? What do you say no to? For us, we've set ours up to where the more we focus on people, the more profitable the company becomes. Because we're all about serving people. And I don't know, it sounds so simple whenever I verbalize it but it's hard work. It's hard work to do that. And so anyway.
Probably because it's that, like you said, 2.5 years of an hour a day. That's not a one-time project. It's not just a, hey, we had pep rally meeting around, you know, an initiative or something like that. And then everybody went back to work and it was business as usual. That, like you said, it's simple, but it doesn't mean that it's easy to do, or at least to stay consistent with, which is what I hear you saying is the consistency to get on the floor with the people where they are working, where the customers may be coming in, to do that, to speak into those moments, to pause things, to view it as teaching development opportunities on a consistent basis. It that takes a lot of mental and emotional energy. How have you developed that mental, emotional energy? Because I think that's something you'll hear other leadership people, you can start going down the rabbit hole of you got to have EQ as well as IQ and all these other things. But I view that as that's a capacity that I don't know that leaders are growing for themselves. How have you cultivated it to sort of maintain that stamina?
You know, I don't know. The only thing I could say is this reminds me of a story that my mother told me once. Is she was a single mom of five kids, and I have three of my own. And one day my wife and I were exhausted, and looked at her and said, "I said, Mom, how did you do it? How did you raise five kids on your own?" And she looks at me, she says, "Baby, I didn't have a choice." And I feel like that whenever you commit down the road, that you it's not really a choice. It's just something you figure out how to do. But it takes a lot of, it takes prioritizing that that the people in our company do matter to me, and that our customers do matter to us, to me personally, but us as an organization, as a company. But yes, it is. You can get burnout. I mean, frankly, if I was to be honest with you right now, I'm tired. even though I just came off of a 5-day vacation, there's we've got a leadership meeting at 7 o'clock in the morning for, we opened up for volunteers, anybody wanted to work on personal leadership development. I'll be working on that this afternoon, and I'll be up here at, it's probably 6:45 in the morning, getting ready for, the team that volunteered to come in, and we'll be coaching them in the morning. But yeah, it takes an extraordinary amount of energy. And the only thing I can say is, maybe it's similar to the way a pastor would prepare. They genuinely care about what they're doing, and they want to make sure that the people that are receiving what would be authentically God's word being taught to them. But for me, it's that we're continually focusing on what is going to grow that individual for whatever time God has them here. I don't know how, and I tell everybody that comes in the door, I don't know how long the Lord's going to have you here, but I do know our goal is that you are better off when you leave than when you got here. And that's financially, spiritually, professionally, all of the will of life things and all the different areas that you're in a better position to do life when you leave. We hire for the long haul, but life happens. But it's that focus in mind that, I don't know how the Lord's going to use that person, and I may not have but just a small window of opportunity to pour into them. And can I be excellent in pouring into that person for the time that they're here?
Yeah. Out of curiosity, if you happen to know it, what's sort of the average tenure for your company?
We have a whole slew of, so we started 20 years ago. I've got people that have been with me 14 years, 13 years, 12 years, 11 years. And then we have kind of a group of younger, if you will, that have been here 5 years or less.
But I think even to say 5 years feels like an eternity when you look at how fast people are moving from job to job, or you hear about companies that they just can't, they say, "I can't find good people." I mean, different professions have been hit differently through COVID and now feeling, we're mostly past, a lot of COVID, but I mean, manufacturing, supply chain, logistics were hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
How did you through something that's arguably one of a pretty tough economic time, like significantly in our human history, let alone U.S. How does what you're doing and how you've been operating, how does that either strengthen or allow you to weather the storm? Because I mean, 20 years is no small feat. I mean, you know the statistics as well as I do about failure rates in first, 12 to 18 months, then 5 years, then 10 years, and past 10 years, you know, it might as well be like half of 1% of businesses started will ever see, you know, 11 years. What's helped you not just maintain that longevity, but also to survive? And it sounds like even thrive on the other side of a really tough economic situation.
1000% culture. We are super intentional about culture. I've got a saying around here when we hire people, even with when we're kind of vetting customers, whether we want to deal with a customer or not, is, you know, what you let through the gate breeds in the pasture. And, you know, you really have to be cautious and conscious about who you're letting into your organization. And we go for culture fit first. And typically, if they're a culture fit for us, they are going to have the ability to learn the stuff that the skills that they need. And we'll teach them those skills. But when you get in a position where you have to hire for skill, it's just going to be a matter of time before you kiss your culture goodbye, because they just don't always work that way, that you find somebody that's going to fit your culture that has the skills you need. And that's probably part of the reason why the current environment is just so topsy-turvy, is because it feels like people are jumping because somebody's willing to pay a little bit more for that skill that you have. That's fantastic. But things move so fast is that skill may be, it will be obsolete in 24 to 36 months. There's no doubt about it. Whatever that skill you have. So we focus on people who, we call it mindset over skill set. And so they've demonstrated in the past, and that they're going to fit in with our culture. And our culture is mindset over skill set, is that at whatever point it stops adding value to the customer, we have to figure out how to unlearn and relearn something new that's going to add value to the customer. And so then you start talking about the culture becomes everybody's looking at how can they upskill to better serve the customer and better serve internal and external. And you don't get a whole building full of people who are worried about, well, my degree says whatever on the wall and that's what I'm going to do. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe somebody in engineering can do sales for you. I don't know. I think that for us, one of the retention things for us has been the culture, is that we give people the ability to come to a place each day with like-minded individuals who are only interested in getting better every day. And I don't know how to explain that other than that's my mindset. And whenever in the past, when we've not stuck with that and I've hired for skill because I really needed, you know, kind of a button seat type situation, it has burned us every time. It's burned us every time. And finally, our team came to me and said, listen, we would rather go through the pain of not having the position filled than hiring the wrong people. It just hurts too bad because they're eventually not going to work. And so we got really, really, really intentional about the way that we our vetting process. We stopped taking resumes for a time, and we only did video applications. And then that has worked very well. And now we kind of have a hybrid of each, because one of the things that we do is when you make an improvement in your area is you take a video of it and you share it on our Signal chat group, so that one, people know what's, you know, somebody in the office may know improvement that was made on the panel line. And we can cheer them on. And then in the morning meetings, we go through those and we talk about, hey, what are we improving on? What's working? What's not working? And you get this sideways dissemination of information and thought. And all of a sudden, it just starts to bubble up. And I think people want to be in that type environment.
Yeah, I certainly can understand why that would be really attractive, not just for, you know, potential new hires, but to keep people coming back, right? Mm-hmm. If it's so positive. I feel like there's probably about 17 different trails that I would want to go down, but we'd end up with a 3-hour podcast, and I'm not Joe Rogan. So, so given our discussion around lean leadership and this development practice that you have that's really more culturally based than just a practice, for you, if a leader, a young business owner or new business owner is listening to this, what's a first step or baby step they could take in the next 24 hours to make progress toward this so that we do avoid the more information, you know, inundation sort of thing, and they can actually start to see some transformation for themselves?
Yeah, I always come back to purpose. So for a company, if you run a small company or any size company, why do the owners choose to leave the lights on in this place? Why are they not taking the money and doing something else with it? So if you don't know that answer, find that answer out. I think that would help you kind of shake off all the other noise and say, okay, do I align with this? Because that may be why you're not growing, is because you don't really align with the purpose of the company, because you don't know what the purpose of the company is. I think as an individual, answer the question, what has God built me to do? What is my passion? Where do I feel like I can make a dent in the universe? Christian terms, it'd be what has God built me to do? How does He design me to minister to other people? And I think that if people will stop, answer those questions, and then use that as a filter to filter all the other stuff coming in, and only receive stuff that starts to help you fulfill that, go down that path, and it'll help start to narrow and focus you in that direction. I think that's a really, really good start. Most people, in my experience, don't have focus because they don't know their purpose.
That'll preach. Well, Adam, I really appreciate your time and sharing, you know, what you and the Southwest team have been doing, and why it's easy to see why people are coming to your shop to check it out, maybe even clean a toilet or two. so there's something behind that. If y'all want to find out, message him. But if people are interested in the work you're doing with Southwest and your teams and leadership development, they want to know more. Where do you send them?
You can go to our website, go to buildsouthwest.com, buildsouthwest.com. You can follow me on LinkedIn. I try to post what our morning meetings are about, what our leadership topics are about. I try to keep, because I do want to encourage other people to lean into that and put the effort in and energy in to doing that. So go to our website right there. You can see our purpose, mission, and values. There's a button right there on our homepage, and you can see kind of what we've developed and the way we filter things. Like, everything filters through that. And LinkedIn would probably be the best way to hit us up. Southwest Steel Buildings on LinkedIn, or you can look for me personally, Adam Steck, on LinkedIn.
And we'll link all that up in the show notes so people can find that pretty easily. Well, Adam, I enjoyed the conversation, and I probably will have some more ideas where we need to talk in the future. But thank you so much for coming on today.
You bet. Thank you, Kenny.